This is Caleb Presley, your host, coming to you live from Miami, South Beach. I'm here for, it's not where I live. I do live in South Florida. I do not live in Miami. I live about an hour or so north, but I'm down here for a, we got a big shoot this week. We got a commercial type thing for, I don't know if I'm supposed to say the brand, so I won't say the brand, but anyways, it's basically like sneaking up on a yacht and beating up some bad guys, kicking them in the nuts. So that's the then that's the entirety of it. That's not like it's not like the trailer or the teaser to get you to watch the whole thing. That is the whole thing. Big yacht, huge yacht, pull up, wearing Miami clothes in Miami, kick some bad guys in the nuts, get the product, which we will be supporting since they're supporting us. But that's why I'm here. But that is also not the point of this podcast. Today we are talking about all types of things, and all those things are brought to you by Five Iron Golf. Five Iron Golf is the number one indoor golf facility in the whole wide world. Some people say the country, and I think those people haven't been enough places because I've never seen in all of my travels in and outside of the territory of the United States of America that even compares to what the golf facilities look like at Five Iron Golf. It is a place where you can go in, you can hit on the simulator, you can play almost any course, if not every course in the country, on their simulator accurately. You can go on a driving range and hit, figure out your distances accurately, be recorded by slow motion capture cameras from multiple angles, and watch your swing back almost in real time. Literally, as soon as you finish swinging, you are watching your swing as it happened, except slower. That's the magic of Five Iron. They also serve drinks, food, and smiles. And that's why I like those guys. So if you want to get a club fitting, go there too. I'm actually going to get a club fitting next week. I've been very tentative, and I'm going to get it at Five Iron. And before I go into that, let me talk about if you have never been, DM them on social media at Five Iron Golf, and you will receive 1 free hour of simulator time. So shout out to Five Iron. Do that. You got to tell them I sent you. Don't just pull up on them. You got to tell them, you know, Caleb sent me. I'm going to raise my levels. I'm producing this myself. And if you tell them I sent you, then they should give you a free hour of simulator time, which is pretty good value. So shout out Five Iron Golf. I'm actually going to get fit next week. I've been asked to get fit a million times by a million places. First of all, I'm doing it at Five Iron, but I haven't wanted to do it because I haven't felt like I had any type of consistency or knowledge or wherewithal in my swing. I didn't feel like I knew what I was doing, and it was going to change so fast. The point of me getting fitted for clubs with that swing was just non-existent. But I finally feel like, okay, I'm at the point now where it would be beneficial for me to, you know, get fit or at least see what that process is like. And I also was kind of convinced by James O. Excuse me. Whenever I had that little lesson with him, he told me, he said, "You're ready." He looked me in the eyes. He said, "You're ready. Get fit." So I'm going to go get fit at Five Iron next week. I'm going to be back up in New York City. God, dude, my schedule was packed. My schedule was packed coming up. And I'm not complaining, but it is packed. I'm going, all right, I'm in Miami now. I have a wedding this weekend in Chapel Hill. Then I'm going to New York City for the week. Then we have Rough and Rowdy in Morgantown, West Virginia, which is going to be awesome. Rough and Rowdy is awesome. West Virginia makes it better. And then Morgantown, to me, that's the epicenter. The origin is also awesome. That's when you do it in kind of Welch County, or you do it in one of the real rural counties in West Virginia. But Morgantown, that's just bread and butter West Virginia. That's the pure, pure Rough and Rowdy experience. That's next Friday. Then I'm going out to Vegas. Got a couple shoot in Vegas. Oh my God. I got a lot coming up. And then we're going to Dallas. And then we're going to, I feel like almost like one of these, you like listen to like professional comedians podcasts and they just are listening off their tour dates. Except I got no tours, hardly any skills. I just got to go travel for work, which I'm excited about. Good cities. These are all good cities. No Jacksonville, Florida's on here, which by the way, I'm sure has good parts. So let that be on the record. I'm sure there are good parts of Jacksonville, Florida. I just haven't been to them, but I have a limited knowledge. I've only been 3 or 4 times. And three of those four times were for the Florida Georgia Florida Georgia football game. So, I mean, that's hard to tell, really. It's really hard to get a really good feel for the city during that. So, take my calling Jacksonville probably the worst city I've ever been to in my life. Not that seriously, because I haven't been that much. The other time I went was for Rough and Rowdy, and that was a hard experience. That was a rough one. I trekked all the way across town to the Goodwill. Me and Ron were walking. That's not a nice downtown. And I'll leave it at that, because I don't like talking bad about people or things. Speaking of saying a good thing about a bad guy, today it looks as if Bernie Madoff has died. Who, if you don't know, Bernie Madoff was, and maybe is, the most famous Ponzi scheme orchestrator of our generations and maybe all of history. He basically tricked thousands, if not millions, if not trillions of people out of their retirements. Old people took their money. Young people took their money. Pretty much anyone who had money that he could take, he was willing to do it. And just by that definition, a bad guy. Now, did he probably have a really weird way of rationalizing it in his mind? Probably. I'm finding, the older I get, that that's what bad guys do. They have a good ability to rationalize things in their mind. But also, it's a humanizing thing. You got to keep that in mind, in your own mind, next time you're doing something bad. And if you're rationalizing it, that's almost as bad. That's the tricky part of doing a bad thing, is are you able to rationalize it in your mind without having, you know, your little good angel on your right shoulder come up and say, hey, that's not the right thing to do and you should stop. And that's just part of being human. But I want to tell a story really quick. I actually met Bernie Madoff when he was in federal prison. My uncle Bobby was and I've told this story before and people have probably heard it, but never on this podcast. And you know, the guy passed away. So I want to tell this good story in his honor. My uncle Bobby, I was 18 years old. I'm growing up in North Carolina. Bernie got sentenced to do time in, forget what the actual jail was called, but it was right outside of Raleigh, North Carolina. And my Uncle Bobby was a guard at the prison. He was a senior guard. He had been there for a long time. He actually had to retire because in the prison system, I guess, you could, once you reach, I want to say 52 or maybe 50, 52 or 58, you have to retire. You don't have a choice. 52 and a half maybe. So he actually has retired since. But I had turned 18. I'd always heard these prison stories from him, all these jail stories. And so finally, once I turned 18, I was actually in the summer about to go to school at Chapel Hill and play football. And how it worked for me was I graduated high school on like June the 3rd, and then I had to report on like June the 4th. So I was probably already playing football at Chapel Hill, or at least I was in the summer workouts or whatever. And that actually makes sense, because that's why I would have been down there towards Raleigh. And my Uncle Bobby said, hey, would you like to come by the jail? And I said, yeah, I would like that. I would like to see where you work. Everyone always, you see jail on TV or whatever, but you know, not many of us, luckily, get a chance to see it from the inside. So, I had no plans of doing anything that was going to give me an opportunity to see it from the inside unless my Uncle Bobby was going to take me. So I said, sure. So when we go, he tells me, hey, listen, we got some pretty high-profile people in here. Bernie Madoff, you know, and this is back when Bernie Madoff was more in the news. I actually, at the time, I didn't really know who he was and what he had done, but I had heard his name. So when he says Bernie Madoff is in here, I knew that name. I didn't know all the details of what he had done and you know, how bad it really was, but I did know the name Bernie Madoff. I was also super into the mafia at the time, and that was something I had pretty much my whole high school career. I had just been really into mafia movies. I read up all the mafia books. I read for example, the Irishman, the new Martin Scorsese movie that came out last year. It was based on a book. I'm trying to think what the book was called. Anyways, I read all those books and I was just super into it. And I was also kind of a little bit kept track of what was going on with the real life modern day mafia. Not so much, more nostalgia, but I did keep track a little bit. Well, anyways, one of the the godfathers of one of the real five families in New York City in the modern era was a guy named Carmine Persico, and he was also a prisoner at my Uncle Bobby's jail. I'm actually going to look this up, and so I could tell you exactly. Carmine Persico, this is just off his Wikipedia. Carmine John Persico, also known as the Snake, was an American mobster and longtime boss of the Colombo crime family in New York City from 1973 until his death in 2019. So he's also died, RIP. He was serving 139 years in federal prison. Wow. Okay, so this guy, Colombo, I mean, even if you don't really like the, you know, mafia, you know, deal, and you're not into all the lore behind the mafia, Colombo crime family, that's everyone knows that. So I'm trying to see if it says on here, too, what the actual jail was where he got in. I'm sure it says Colombo, boom, boom, boom. Golly, the okay, listen, this is hilarious. This is how you know you're a freaking mob boss. I'm looking under his prison section of his Wikipedia, and this is all the subcategories under prison. Colombo and commission trials, that would be to be expected. Revenge, of course. Brooklyn rivalry, okay, shouldn't he be in jail by now? Third Colombo War, changing the family structure. Those are all just part of his prison section. I'm not going to spend a ton of time to figure it out. And I just saw that he did end up doing life in Butner, a medium security correctional facility in North Carolina, which is where my uncle worked, where Bernie Madoff was, and where Carmine Persico was, and when on this magical summer day, I was. So going to the jail, and my Uncle Bobby was kind of showing me around, basically, you know, here's the yard, here's where the guys work out, here's the, you know, the mess hall where they eat, here are the different, you know, different types of rooms. The people had their own rooms. There was places where there was, like, just a big jail building type of thing where everyone had different cells, but they were separate. And then there was also a room that he took me in where Bernie was at the time. And he walked right up to this guy. And I don't, keep in mind, I don't really know who he is. And it's Bernie Madoff. And he basically is like, hey, Bernie, do you mind? You have a second? And Bernie's like, dude, I'm in prison for life. So my Uncle Bob was like, yeah, well, this is my nephew, Caleb. He is, and, you know, the football thing was kind of the angle. He was like, he's about to be a freshman quarterback at the University of North Carolina. He just enrolled there now. And, you know, he played high school football in Asheville, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, he just wanted to give a chance to introduce you guys. So Bernie, and keep in mind, I don't really know much about him, but there's a reason, you have to think, there's a reason why this guy was able to pull the wool over so many important people's eyes. I think he took a bunch of money from like the owner of the Mets, or, and I'm not talking about Steve Cohen, but the old owner of the Mets, like a bunch of just like very well-known, famous, well-off people. He really tricked a lot of those big timers. There's a reason why. He was super nice, super charismatic. You know, made you really, he looked at me, he's like kind of a politician, really made me, looked at me and made me really seem like he was interested in what I was saying. So I started telling him what I'm doing. He's asking me all these questions. And I'm speaking to Bernie Madoff and I'm 18. He's like, so what's up? You're going to North Carolina? Oh man. He's talking to me about the different quarterbacks, who he likes. He's talking about why he thinks Tom Brady is the greatest. Then he says, you know, he tries to introduce me to, or not, you know, Facebook's around at this time. He's like trying to, he's like, set me up with his niece, who's also going to Carolina, on Facebook. He's like, gave me her name, told me what to look up. It's not, her last name's not Madoff, but it was like, gave me the full name. And then basically we had a great time. I was like, dude, I told my Uncle Bob, I was like, that's the nicest guy I've ever talked to. Talked to him for like 15 minutes. And my boss was like, yeah, I mean, not the greatest dude, but a pretty good dude, if you know what I'm saying. Like, not the best dude, but also awesome guy to talk to. So then it's their little break time, or they get their hour in the yard or whatever. I don't want to mischaracterize. I don't know exactly the details of it, but basically they go on break. Well, Bernie goes out and he's sitting on this picnic table. And I'm not seeing this from outside. I'm inside, but we're out looking through the window. Bernie's sitting at this picnic table with this other guy, Carmine Persico. Here they are, two of the greatest, maybe worst criminals of the modern era, in a medium security facility in Butner, North Carolina, right outside Raleigh, just yucking it up at lunchtime, sitting on a wooden, out there on a freaking, picnic table. And Marco Bobby's telling me, that's who he's talking to is, Carmine Persico, the leader of the Colombo crime family, blah, blah, blah. He's like, don't worry, we'll go talk to him after. Then he ended up taking me to show. The one place he didn't take me in was like, there was like another place in that facility for like child, guys who like mess with kids and stuff like that, sex crimes, weird stuff. Obviously didn't mess with that area. But he introduced me to some other friends at work, whatever. And then once that little break time was over, we went to Carmine Persico's jail cell. His little jail cell was in this, it was like more what you would see on TV than Bernie's was. It was like a big, everything was stainless steel, multi-level. It was actually a big circle facility, and everyone had individual cells. His was actually a little bit below the ground, like you had to walk some steps down into it, almost like the basketball bench at Vanderbilt, how the benches are below the court. That's almost how his little cell was. And he was just sitting in there when he came up, and he was writing a letter. And so I didn't really talk to him at all, really. My Uncle Bobby just said, hey, I just want to introduce you. He said, oh, hi, how you doing? And that was kind of it. My Uncle Bobby said, we'll let him be. He's writing a letter. And then he went on to tell me, he's like, yeah, they actually still conduct a lot of their, like, mafia business. Like, he's still the head of the family. Not just because he's in jail doesn't mean he's, like, not making calling shots and, like, putting in a lot of the strategic planning and what they're doing in their operation. He says they just use a lot of code words and, like, it's not their first rodeo of having a big-time guy go to jail. They know how to navigate pretty much the whole situation. So he said, yeah, he was, like, calling all the shots stuff from jail. And then we had to get out of there because a fight broke out. And it turns out, Marco Bobby said after the fact, he didn't tell me that day. We got out of there because people started yelling at each other. It's like, we got to get out of here. And I think there was like a gang fight in that little stainless steel area that I was telling you about. And I think people died. I think I was like almost got killed in jail without even having going. First ever 18-year-old to get stabbed to death in jail didn't even go to jail. So thank God I made it out. What a crazy story. And RIP Bernie, and also RIP Carmine Persico. If you're going to be bad, at least they did it big. These guys are really bad dudes, but I don't know what to say. I don't know how to ration. I mean, I met them. They were bad dudes, but I met them. So I don't know what that is. Today's episode is also, by the way, brought to you by our friends over at, you guessed it, Gosling's Rum. Gosling's Rum is, at first, so let me tell you a story with me and Gosling's Rum. Take a little sip of coconut water. Wish it was Gosling's Rum. Gosling's Rum, I had never had a sip of their product before. I feel dumb, yes, because it is the key ingredient to the Dark and Stormy cocktail, if you ever heard of that. And that's the official cocktail of the 19th hole. I didn't know. I didn't have it. It's on me. Whatever. I get reached out to by this guy, Malcolm. Malcolm is a very good guy from Gosling's Rum. He reaches out and says, would you like tickets, VIP, to the Bear Trap? Which is, if you don't know, it's like the back-to-back, I think it's back-to-back par threes at the Honda Classic, right at the PGA National, on the championship course at PGA National. PGA event, did a terrible job explaining it. Basically, very good tickets. Would you want to come? It's in Florida, right by where I'm living, it's in Jupiter. So I'm like, yeah, I would love that. Go out there. Malcolm turns out to be the greatest guy in the world. He introduces me to Gosling's Rum. That would be like, and it's his product. I don't know if he's a CEO, the president. I don't know if he just does PR. I don't know if he's just their marketing guy. I don't know if it's his dad's company. I don't know if he founded it, started it from the ground up, built it from a garage like his Apple, and he's Steve Jobs. And the other woman that he introduced me to was Wozniak. I have no idea what his affiliation is at all to this day with Gosling's Rum. All I know is he was a great guy, gave me great vibes, and made me trust him enough for me to try this product. So I tried the product, Gosling's Rum. I said, and I insisted upon, listen, I know it's going to taste good in the dark and stormy. I've heard about the dark and stormy. Not that many people talk about something if it's not good. It's like when I was growing up, my mom always told me, Caleb, people aren't always doing drugs and talking about drugs because they're not good. They got to be good. You just got to stay away from them anyways. It's not that, I'm not going to sit here and tell you drugs are bad. If drugs were all the way bad, then people wouldn't do them. There's got to be something to them. But just trust me, the smart thing to do is stay away from them. I knew, based on how many people were talking about the dark and stormy, that if you use a Gosling's Rum in the dark and stormy, that was going to be good. I insisted to Malcolm, we try it straight. I want a shot of this Gosling's Rum. And I'm going to see what it really tastes like. So he started me off with a shot. Went down smoother than I expected. I'm not a rum guy, so I didn't know what to expect. But it went down smoother than expected. And by saying I'm not a rum guy, I just said, basically, I've never tried it. Okay? I'm going to be completely frank. So then I was like, all right, this is good. Let's turn it up a notch. Let's do the dark and stormy. Did a dark and stormy. Then I was like, all right, one dark and stormy. I don't want to do too many ginger beers today. Let's. What else can we throw it in? He threw down another drink. It was like a soda water with Gosling's Rum and something else. It was great. And then before I know it, I got a little bit of a buzz at the PGA National. And I don't know if I told the story last week or not, but I farted on a guy. And I'm not saying it's all my buzz. Let's end the Gosling's thing right here, because I don't know if they're pro farts, or, you know, if they want to endorse farts as well, or even say that their product makes them fart. I don't think it was a product. I just think that it basically, okay, so that's the end of the Gosling's Rum. Thank you, Gosling's Rum, for sponsoring this podcast. Gosling's Rum, it's the best. So I think I've already told this story, but if I haven't, it's good enough to tell again. I got a little buzz on. We're at the PGA Classic. We're watching Rory tee off. We're trying to get a good spot. Look to my left. Everyone I'm there with, all my friends are to my left. Great. Then Rory is about to tee off. And I basically, for lack of better words, had to fart and I let one loose. Right next to the bear. If you've ever been there where the bear trap is, the actual bear, the statue, I was to the left of the bear, and I thought that I was close enough to the bear that no one would be able to walk up on my right side. I farted. Didn't expect it to be so loud, but it was loud. It was very loud. It was like so much so that the people on my left, my friends, had even heard it, and it was embarrassing to me. And I was like, oh, and their face looked almost shocked, like they had never heard me fart, which is what threw me off. Because I was like, all right, was that inappropriate and gross? Yes, but you guys have heard me fart before. What's the shocked face for? Maybe it should be a gross, or you should be laughing, punch me in the shoulder, but why are you shocked? So I turned around to the bear, and I couldn't see it, because there was a woman and a man who had snuck into my right, who I had just absolutely obliterated with a huge fart bomb. So I looked at him, and there was really no denying it, because it was very clear what it was. It was a type thing, right? And I just had to look at him, and I didn't know if they knew who I was. I'm hoping they didn't. You know, they definitely won't forget me, but hopefully they didn't affiliate like, oh, that's the guy who freaking, you know, that's that's the guy who wants to be a professional golfer, just freaking polluting this court with methane bombs. But I farted in their face. And all I could do was laugh. All I could do was laugh. I turned to them and I just laughed. I couldn't help myself. It was just such an awkward situation. It was just so funny. It was like a movie or something. I just like laughed. And I said, I'm sorry. And they laughed too. And they couldn't stop laughing either. And I don't know if they're laughing to this day. They might not still think it's funny. But somehow I got out of that situation without really a stern talking to. Just, I think, strictly based off the fact that it was so preposterous. It was funny. So, but being that this is a golf podcast, let's talk a little bit about the Masters, since that's the biggest event of the probably entire year. and it just happened this past week, and it's also my dream to one day play at Augusta and play in the Masters in some respect, and people don't think I can do it, and there are times when I'm wondering if I can do it, and then I remind myself that I can, and then why not? And that even if for some reason I don't, what a valiant chase and way to live your life to reach for your greatest goals and hopes and dreams and go for them. And there's nothing that you can't lay your head on your pillow and sleep at night if you do that. So I remind myself of that, and I said, okay, let's keep going for it. Even though right now I played golf a lot last week, and my body feels like completely broken down. Both my shoulders feel like they're out of their joints, and my lower back completely just tightened up. And there's a part on my left side that the sciatic joint or whatever they're talking about is screaming. Even though those things are happening, I'm still like, maybe this is my body's way of telling me that, you know, it's happy about what I'm doing. It's giving me feedback. It's like, hey, we're hurting so much. We're having so much fun. We're hurting. Or maybe it's like, give me a break and just think about this. Know what it's saying? It's saying, because I love golf so much, and this is the truth. This is the freaking truth. I love golf so much that if my body didn't start killing me and my lower back didn't start cramping up and my sciatic nerves didn't start pinching and my shoulders didn't start going in and out of socket, that you wouldn't be able to pry me away from the course. I would throw my life down the hole. I wouldn't record this podcast. I wouldn't do anything else for my work. I wouldn't talk to my family. I wouldn't talk to my friends. I wouldn't eat food. I would just golf. That's how much I love this game, and that's why my body is screaming at me. It's not saying, Caleb, we don't think you're going to be able to make the pro tour because it's you know, you're 28 and you're only getting older. It's saying, Caleb, you have to remember that you have a life outside of golf. Go take care of those responsibilities and come back. We'll be here waiting for you. That's how I look at it, at least. But yeah, my body's screaming at me, but the Masters is a dream of mine, and that did just take place, and I did watch it. Now, I watched it. I think that I watched it the best way you can watch it. I'm new. This is actually my second Masters I've actually watched. The first one was in the fall. Keep in mind, I'm new to golf, so I didn't get to catch Tiger winning in 2018, nothing like that. I thought the one in the fall was really boring. Dustin Johnson won by 100 strokes. And so this one, you know, obviously was kind of wasn't quite as huge of a difference, but it was still like a big difference. I think I watched it the best way you can watch it. Instead of being glued to my couch all weekend, watching every shot, which I know some people do and which they enjoy, and I won't take that from them, but I went out on the course on Friday and I played 36 holes. And when I would come in and get a snack, or when I was playing Sugar Mill, shout out Jack Holcomb up there in Cole Holcomb, my good family friends, they took me out on, that's their country club, and they took me out, and I thank them. I asked them over the weekend, is it okay if I even mention your name? Because they've done other stories on this podcast, and I've left their name out of it. They said they didn't care. So shout out to them. Playing Sugar Mill, great course. One of my favorite courses to play, actually. It's in New Smyrna, Florida. And every time I would come into the clubhouse or whatever, or go into the pro shop to buy more balls or whatever, because you know I'm buying balls because I'm losing balls. Side note, usually my average, I don't keep score, but my average balls loss is 24 balls around. On that day, I played, this is an improvement. On that day, I went out with 24 balls. I played 36 holes and had 8 balls left. So I only lost 16 balls through 36 holes, which is a new personal record and I think shows improvement. Anyways, I'm going in on the Friday and I'm watching, you know, who's up, who's a leader, you know, watching the great shots. I think Tommy Fleetwood had his hole in one that day. And so I'm like checking it out. I feel like I'm in the mix, but I'm also playing golf. That's what golf is. Make no mistake about it, the reason why golf is such a special sport is because you, the spectator, can also go play it and have a fantastic time playing it. If you're sitting down in golf and football, or golf and basketball are going toe-to-toe, head-to-head, and entertainment value, it's a blowout. It's Dustin Johnson in the Fall Masters. And Dustin Johnson is basketball and football. It's not even close to as entertaining to watch. But it is entertaining to watch if you're also combining it with playing a little bit yourself. It's like, I think they say that like CBD doesn't really work unless you have some elements of THC as well. Like THC is like the psychoactive element of marijuana. And even the people who are using CBD, you know, which they're saying is just which I don't really, you know, I don't know if it works or not. I have no idea. But like CBD, you rub it into your skin and all of a sudden your skin's feeling better. I've heard, or you take the pills and then you're supposed to relax you. I've heard that those CBD will work, but only if it has a little bit of THC on the side. So if you're just taking the non-psychoactive, you need a little bit of the psychoactive to make it work. That's how I think of golf. You need a little bit of the playing it to make the watching it work. If you never play it, you can't watch it. It's too boring. So you have to play. And on Friday, I'm playing all day, right? Checking in on the score. Saturday, my back feels broke and my shoulders feel popped out and there's no playing to be done. So we watch a little bit more of it. We're keeping a very good track of what's going on. And we did pop out a little bit, pop in and out, but that's a good thing because everywhere you pop, that's what's beautiful about the Masters is it's a full day, 4 day affair. So it's not like a Super Bowl where if you miss it for 3 hours, you've missed it. You can pop around town and everyone's watching it. So you pop to the restaurant. It's on at the restaurant. You can check it out. You pop over to the bar. It's on at the bar. You pop over to a sporting goods store. Boom, it's on the television. Then you go home. Boom, still on the television on multiple channels. That's how you watch the Masters. You go around town, you keep an eye on it. And then on Sunday, you sink your ass into the couch and you watch all day. And that's exactly what I did. And I'll even say this, and think that I'm expressing this because I don't want you guys to feel alone out there who also did this because I know I wasn't the only one. Saturday night, we were at a dinner party in New Smyrna. Shout out Norwood's Jungle Restaurant. At a dinner party and had been drinking all kind of day, been out on the water, then nothing intense or crazy, but definitely had a few drinks and then restart for dinner. We're past dinner at this point. It's, you know, done the champagne toast. It's someone's birthday party. And then we're just kind of drinking. And at this point, it would be the point in the night where I would usually turn it off because I'm like, all right, point of diminishing returns. I'm not getting much bang for my buck here buzz-wise, and I'm just contributing to a huge hangover tomorrow. Let's just take this one home or even just start up the water train right now. That's what I would normally do. I'm 28, by the way. Like, it took me a long time to get to that point. I still have work to do on this, but I am getting better at it. It's like, all right, party's over, hit some waters. Partly been forced to by my aging body and then partly wisdom. Knowing that the Masters was the next day, and also in Florida they were predicting heavy rain, Sunday, Masters, heavy rain, can't do anything outside, can't golf, can't go on the boat, can't go on the ocean, basically forced to watch the Masters. I had a couple of extra glasses of wine, straight up, because I knew that what's the reason not to? I need to be hungover. The more hungover I am, the better, because I need to be firmly planted in that couch. I don't even want to think about trying to move my body. I want to watch every swing. I want to watch the highlighted selected groups. I want to watch the groups who suck. I want to watch guys who are in contention, guys who are not in contention. I want to watch Jordan Spieth. And that's what I did. And I had a few extra glasses of wine and it worked because on Master Sunday, I was firmly planted in that couch and it was a boring day of golf. Not much happened. There was a moment when, you know, I'm not going to recap it. It's far enough away now, but yeah, I'm still waiting on that one golf tournament that really like keeps me coming back. Like they say, the one shot that keeps you coming back when you're just pure and iron. And you're like, wow, I really can do this. I'm still waiting on that watching experience. But and the guys I was rooting for, you know, my pool all sucks. So it is what it is. But I still liked it and I still plan on playing in it. Today's episode is also brought to you by episode. It's not opposite day. It's episode day. And it's brought to you by Roman Swipes. Most guys have tried different ways of lasting longer, whether it's thinking about baseball or golf, because those two would be some of the most boring things you could think about watching, in my experience. That doesn't always work. Folks at Roman, an online men's health company, are changing the game with Roman Swipes, the secret to longer-lasting sex. Here's the deal with longer-lasting sex. Apparently, it's the reason why it's so hot in the streets right now is because sex is good. Sex is, you know, people are enjoying sex a lot. And if you can do it for longer, then you technically, how the math works out is that the good thing lasts. You get more of the good thing for your buck, more bang for your buck, so to speak. You know? So if you want to have more strokes, then I would recommend you go to getroman.com/strokes. And you can get your first month off swipes for just $5. That's with my code, strokes. That worked out well, didn't it? When you choose a monthly plan. That's getroman.com/strokes. Roman swipes are clinically proven. They're effective. They can ship them discreetly because that's important. Super easy to use. You just take the swipes out of the packet, swipe it on, let it dry, good to go. Go after it. Get your strokes in. So thank you to Roman for sponsoring the pod, for believing in the dream, and for helping men and women have longer lasting sex with whomever they are having sex with. All right, a couple more things before we get out of here. You know, golf, we talked a little bit about the Masters stuff. It's going well. My body's breaking down. I'm trying to do my best. I'm really got a lot of travel coming up. I did buy a travel bag. I don't know what to get. They had a couple options. I bought the one that looked like it had the most protection on it. It's like, what? Some of them just looked like bags. Like, it was just like a plastic bag, like a really nice bag. But it's like, dude, if I put my clubs in this, I might as well just freaking throw them around myself. These are going to offer me no protection to my most valued possessions. So I just got the one that looked ugly, but it just looked like a military grade weapon. It looked like something you put a bomb in. It had a lot of ridges and just look firm and hard. And that's the one I bought because I wanted my clubs to be taken care of as I travel and lug them around this United States of America. Also, I want to do a quick shout out to my guy, Chet Hanks. This guy started White Boy Summer, which is, you know, off the rip, sounded controversial. When I first saw what he was doing, I said, dude, I don't know if this is going to go well for him. I think it's going stupendously. I think he has somehow nailed the fact that this summer, which is categorized strictly by race and gender, is neither misogynistic or racist. I don't know how he did that, but for some reason, it just feels like he has somehow been able to empower every group across our country. I was recently blessed enough to meet Chet. He's actually he's a fellow golfer, fellow aspiring golfer. And I got a chance to meet him. I was in Hollywood, did an interview with Young Gravy during the day for Sunday Conversation. And during the night, we went to a party in Hollywood. And Chet was there. And I had already exchanged a message with him over DM on Instagram because he's a Sunday Conversation fan. And I saw him. I went up to him. Dude, couldn't have been any nicer. I think there's a chance that he was telling me about that. I can't tell you the actual idea because it's like his IP and he'd probably get murdered for it. And also it would just be a messed up thing to do. But he has like a pretty like funny movie idea. He was telling me it was going to be me and him. We're going to star in it. Can you imagine that? Me and Chet Hanks starring in a film? Dude, it could happen. I told him, I was like, dude, I don't think that that's the direction my life's going. I don't see myself becoming a comedic movie star, but I'm not against it. Like, he's like trying to convince me. I'm like, dude, you have to convince me. Like, I'll think about it. Like, I'll do it. I'm not scared to do it. I'm not scared. I just didn't think about it before. I just didn't see that happening. You know, people are always, especially now he's going super viral about this White Boy Summer, and people are always trying to give him a hard time. Listen, I only talked to him for an hour or so. So I don't know all the inner details of his and inner workings of his life. Dude seems like a nice guy. What's the point of railing on somebody just because he's trying to start a movement? It's always the revolutionaries though that get massacred. And then everyone hates him while they're alive, and all of a sudden, you know, something happens someone who's not a big fan of White Boy Summer tries to end it for Chet, and then all of a sudden everyone's coming to rally behind him saying how good of a guy, how innovative he was. I'm just saying, I don't want that to be his story, and I want to recognize the real ones while they're here. So shout out Chet Hanks for White Boy Summer. I don't know. Will it be? There's only one way to find out. I'm just very happy that he was able to, because when I first saw he was doing White Boy Summer, it was actually like a day or two after I had just met him. And I was like, oh, no, dude. No. And somehow he's been able to pull it off where White Boy Summer doesn't seem to be racist or misogynistic, which, dude, you got to give us respect where respect is due. Also, music video is not bad. Music video is not bad. A lot of booty shaking, some cool tattoos. That's what America's about. So, shout out Chet. Last thing I want to talk about today before we get out of here is the, and by the way, saying that, it makes me sound like when I was growing up, went to a lot of church services. That's the number way if the preacher says, I'm going to get you guys out of here soon, or something to that effect. Like, okay, and let's say one more thing before we wrap this up. That's how you know you have a long time left. That's preacher 101. If he says, and one more thing before we get out of here, you're in for 45 more minutes. That's not the case on this. This is actually the last thing I'm going to say on today's podcast, or last subject. Bitcoin's popping again. It's popping up and up and up, new all-time highs. We had on Bitcoin Marty, who introduced me to Bitcoin when it was all-time high around 40,000. It's at 64,000 now. To me, it feels like, how could it not happen at this point? At this point, the only thing that can stop Bitcoin, in my mind, it's not the U.S. government. It's not the world governments coming together. It's not any type of regulation or bad PR or new cooler coin fad comes along. The only thing that could stop Bitcoin is if Satoshi Nakamoto, the guy who invented it, who has millions of coins, if those coins start moving around. Now, at this point, everyone kind of thinks, you know, they don't know who this guy is. Maybe a few people do, but they're not talking. A couple guys claiming to be him, they're obviously not. You think that he created this in a very idealistic manner, and that he wants Bitcoin to really, it's so close, it's going to happen. You know, he wants it to really fulfill its full potential. But he has, a million or more coins himself that haven't moved since the origination of Bitcoin. Dude, is he just not going to make any money on this? Because if he moves those coins, I'm not saying he's going to convert them to cash and cash out and be a quadrillionaire. I think he would actually wait until Bitcoin, it's worth it to just use Bitcoin instead of cash. But what happens if he moves those coins? And that's like the awakening of the dragon. Then everyone goes, oh shit, who is this guy? It's the one thing no one wants to talk about right now. There's some random guy that we don't know who it is. And I love Bitcoins. You know that I hope it pops off, and you know I hope it works. But I'm just facing the facts that everyone's so caught up in the price and the idea of what could be in this perfect world scenario. No one wants to talk about that. We don't know who it was who started them, who has the most of them. Again, I'm a proponent of Bitcoins. I love Bitcoins. I would have more if I could. I would have as many Bitcoins as Satoshi Nakamoto if I could. However, I'm not going to turn a blind eye to the fact that no one knows who this guy is, if he's alive or dead, and what he is doing with the million or so Bitcoins he has. And because Bitcoin is an open network, we will know. There are people who will see and will report back to us via internet if these things start moving. He wants to start putting them in an interest account just to keep them, but gain some interest on them, and boom, poof. The price plummets, everyone gets scared, and people are trying to buy back American dollars on the street for for dollars on the coin. Not pennies on the dollar, dollars on the coin. Coins on the dollar. That's my biggest concern right now. But look, it's popping off. And that, if that does not happen, if this guy, alive or dead, hopefully he's, I was going to say hopefully he's dead. He seems like a good guy. I hope he's alive and can just make the right decision. But if he's able to just let those coins be, let them fade off into internet and say it's lost cause for the greater of humanity, that's even more impressive to me than if he was to give his life. Then he would to martyr himself, because he basically is. If you give up what could be make you the richest person probably in the world by the time it's all said and done, and he's able to give that up, that life of what he could leave, just to probably, I mean, I'm sure he's, I mean, smart guy, invested elsewhere, probably millionaire, you know, maybe a multimillionaire, but there's a lot of levels between richest person on earth and multimillionaire. If he's able to give that up for the greater good of humanity, that's more impressive to me than if he was to die for the greater good of humanity. To live knowing that what you could have and not seizing it because for the greater good, that's just as impressive as dying for the greater good. So I hope he does. And if that's the case, this thing's ripping, man. I saw Dave is talking about it's, you know, he missed on Bitcoin. And Dave is a different animal on this type of stuff. So, you know, I'm not saying he should get in. He should, but I'm not saying that he should. But if you're considering it, again, it's not a 100% thing, 100% sure thing, but by the looks of it, it's looking pretty good. If it does happen, it's still, I mean, we're not even, it's not even in the, I feel like we're in the second inning. If this is a 9-inning ball game that might go extras, we're in the second inning. It's early still. Are you going to be the person who got it for $5, $10, $1,000? No. But could you be the person who got it for $60,000? Yeah. And if it goes to $1 million, $2 million, $5 million, $60,000 looks pretty good. I saw someone tweeted the other day. It said, don't be the person who tells your grandparents that you sold your Bitcoins at 0.06 million US dollars. Emphasis on the fact of don't look at it like what it is now, 60,000. Look at it, what it could be if it works. If this works and everything falls into place, which it seems like it's going to, can't call it, seems like it's going to. Right now, you can't really see it. For me, it's hard to see an alternative where it's, this doesn't happen. You know, I don't the problem with me is I don't really understand all the fucking inner workings of the coding and stuff. But all the people who do understand that seem to have vetted it and they seem to give it a go. So I am trusting that these smart people who know how to code and understand the inner workings of all that, that they're saying that the fundamentals are good. I am trusting on that. If that is true, then just how society is going and how they're inflating the dollar bill, this is going to be a big deal. It's going to be a big deal. So hopefully Satoshi Nakamoto can take one for the team. Dude, I will literally, Satoshi, if you want to hit me up privately, I will literally, dude, I will freaking, we'll make a bar tab. Come to Chapel Hill with me this weekend and we'll freaking buy out the bar for you, brother. So yeah, I mean, and the reason I even say that new all-time high this week, kind of just got to, anytime it's a huge all-time high, got to at least give some extra, some catch-up thoughts. And also the IPO of Coinbase, which I have nothing to do. They just said Nas, who was in my dream last night for no reason, that he's going to make $100 million off the IPO of Coinbase, and that Kevin Durant's making a lot too. If you're someone out there and you want to have a great idea like that and you want an early investor, check me out. I'm your guy. I would love to be an early investor and make $100 million in one of these companies. I'm an open-minded guy, and I'll consider your product. Thank you for listening to 51 Strokes. We will be back next week. I'll be from New York City. I don't know what that episode will look like, if we'll have a good guest on or if it will be me. But I like doing the show both ways, and I hope that you do. We have new merch. Florida gear is in. Florida gear is awesome. I do recommend, if you're in a cold weather state, to get the sweatshirt. Sweatshirt seems to be the one that's the coolest, but the shirts are also cool, and new hats are on the way. So check that out. And we'll just keep getting better every day. Eat this elephant one bite at a time. Stick together. Keep our heads up. And RIP Bernie Sanders. Excuse me, Bernie Madoff. And LIP, live in peace, and live in power. LIP, Lip, Bernie Sanders. Thank you.